Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast. My name is Scroobius Pip. Thank you for tuning in, guys. There's one of my guests eating crisps. Answers on a postcard. Was it Stu Whiffin or Chris Glasson? Before I get into introducing my guests, I'm just going to do the beginning bit of mentioning we're sponsored by Speech of Element Records, which is where you can go and buy the POS album on blue vinyl, which is amazing, and all the Dark Summer goodies. The sunglasses have sold out again. We're going to get another batch in a week or so. Is there anything I need to tell you about? You've been tuning in and been lovely. Great reactions to all the pod. I'm not even going to bother. I'd give you a warning that these podcasts are normally an absolute mess because we get quite drunk. Let's just jump into it. Right, I am joined by Stu Whiffin.
Wada!
And Chris Glasson. Oh, sorry, it's still going. And Chris Glasson.
Hey, gang.
Of the Hardcore Listing Podcast. How are you guys?
I'm bloody brilliant.
Are you?
I'm really excited about tonight now.
Yeah, do you know what? I've got to be honest, right? We done a podcast yesterday, didn't we, me and you? And then we got stuck in some traffic. And then you met my friends last night. And I got quite drunk. And woke up a bit rough this morning. I had to go to work. And in the afternoon, I was thinking, oh, man. I don't know if you could do it. I'm not really feeling this. Yeah. And I've got around here and I just got a little bit excited.
Yeah. You saw my handsome face and it brightened up your day, right?
No, it was the bag of sensations.
He loves the sensation.
I went round one of Stu's mate's house last night. And Stu said, do you want to come over and meet the mates? So I was like, yeah, okay. And then they were like, oh, down here is just an old bomb shelter. Do you just want to go down there, Chris? In his back garden. And at that point, I thought...
Sexy time.
I get it. I know what I'm over here for now.
It was quite sinister, wasn't it?
It was. It was like a proper like air raid shelter. And it was, that old musky smell.
Yeah.
That sounds hideous.
But it was a good laugh. And what a bar Wayne's got out the back, man.
Yeah.
Proper.
I mean, we should mention that. This is the first drunk cast in the new Distraction Pieces studio instead of the Whiffin.
It's a bit nice, isn't it?
It's all right, isn't it?
It's really nice.
So we're usually in the Whiffin, but now that's the home of Hardcore Listing. We've moved the drunk cast to the Distraction Pieces studio.
Yep.
There's some nice art about. There's some pictures.
Nice big picture of Prince.
Yeah.
Good big picture of Prince. There's a few pictures of me. And it's
in your own studio.
In my own studio. But it made me think of genuinely the most I've ever laughed in my life. a lot of bands, or everyone, like when you're touring that, you'll get a poster or something and keep it, and everyone will sign it and you'll frame it and stuff like that. So it's just quite a common thing. But we were, I'm sure I've told this before, but we were at B. Dolan's a wedding. So me and Dan Lasak had flown out there a few days early, and we were doing like barbecues and stuff. So it's me, B. Dolan, Dan Lasak, Sage Francis, a load of others. And me, Dan and Sage were in B's studio because he had some new tracks to play us. And it's taken a minute to load up. And obviously there's like all of Dolan's albums on the wall framed and stuff like that, some tour posters. And there's just a moment of silence and Sage just looks around and goes, so who's the B. Dolan fan? and it just slayed me more than anything in my life. So who's the B. Dolan fan? Anyway, what are we going to talk about today? There's a lot on the list. Shall I go through some bits on my list first?
I just want to say, just quickly, that it is nice in here. It feels a bit professional, and I just feel bad because I just feel that it could get messy tonight.
Yeah, it probably will get messy.
I've drunk half a glass of gin already. I've been sat down for about 2 minutes.
There's three bottles of gin and three people.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to get
a bottle and a half each.
I've made a note. I've made a note at the top of my podcast list to take Polaroids as we go.
Oh,
because normally we take them all at the end, don't we? And I think it'll probably actually be more entertaining the more drunk we get. The first ones were quite sober.
So on
and so forth.
And then the last one's usually maybe cupcakes in my eyes or something like that, isn't it?
It's normally the way. But I mean, you speak of how nice the studio is. We're in our comfortable Haag Cabisco chairs.
Mate, these are good.
Yeah,
which I'm banging on about a lot, but it's because Rogan mentioned them on his podcast, and we're all fans of Rogan's podcast. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of the daddy of it. And he talked about how they give you good posture, but you can relax, they're comfy. And yeah, I then looked into it and had to get a few. They did comfy.
I genuinely need a chair. And I've been like, because my office chair is just absolute
And
shit.
This isn't an advert. They're not sponsors or anything.
I don't give a fuck. But my office chair is genuinely shit. I don't like sitting in my house. I hate working on that desk.
Yeah.
So I've just started looking for chairs. So this might be the worst.
Is that why you never get any work done?
Always looking for chairs, bruv.
Yeah. So we're going to discuss a lot of things today. It's been a while. Mm. Right. I put out a shout earlier on Facebook and Instagram to get people to submit some questions. Mm. So we've got that to fall back on.
Okay.
But on my list, I've got Banksy Gate.
Mm. Yeah.
It's been an intense week. Yeah. Week or two. I've got just a hardcore listing and distraction pieces highlights. Okay. So we can have a chat of what's been the best.
Yeah.
Just a thing that I've noticed on the drunk on now you guys have got your own podcast, and we'll start with that actually, I think, but I'm going through a few first.
Right.
Just the fact that, do you find yourself doing things in life so you can talk about it on the podcast now, and so on and so forth? But yeah, anyway,
it's a very good question.
We'll go through
we've got
the We Are Lizards a photo booth session. Yep. I'll mention that now, and we'll talk about it as well later. But we've got We Are Lizards on July 22nd, haven't we?
Somebody's birthday.
It's my birthday special. So what we've decided is we're going to do a photo booth session, because even you guys have had it now that we have people come up throughout the night asking for photos and stuff like that, which is lovely. We're always there, but
Stu's nodding knowingly there, like he's a big deal. Yeah,
but we've had a few people message me saying, "Oh, I wanted a photo or a chat, but it was too busy," and it gets hectic about 10, doesn't it?
So, brilliant, you're doing all of this during my DJ set.
No, that's it. That's it. We thought 8 till 9, you can come and hear Stu DJ, and we'll do a photo booth a session, because they've got a photo booth there. So I'll jump in with anyone who wants a photo, and then we can all sign them throughout the night and things like that, and do it as a bit of a... So 8 till 9, if you come down, it's free 8 till 9. We don't start charging until Stu set's finished, because that feels unfair.
That's not right. It wouldn't be right, mate.
So 8 till 9 at the book club.
And everything else aside, it's a fucking great night. And we've got John Kennedy, Radio XFM. X or XFM legend.
Yeah.
Who else have we got?
Sam Redmore.
Who we had once
at the London one, and he couldn't have fit in better.
Yeah.
He just slotted straight in, was just the perfect fit. And we've got DJ Destruction and
Discotheque Credits.
So, yeah, it's going to be a great one. I want to talk about me being hit by a ghost car. I want to talk about chatting with Samuel L. Jackson on the C2C train into London. Stu DJing in Dartford.
Oh,
I need
mate.
To tell that story. We've forgotten that twice now.
We did that last time.
We've forgotten it twice.
No.
Dude,
fuck.
Tweeted us both, didn't he?
Yeah.
So we missed it. I visited the Ben & Jerry's headquarters.
Did you meet Ben or Jerry?
I met Ben and Jerry. I didn't meet either. But it was good. I've got one note. I won't go into detail yet, but the note just says, "Ball bag Carpaccio." I've got a joke. I've got a joke for Chris. Is that...
What did I say?
Oh, fucking...
It was definitely
me.
You.
What did I say?
Went off yesterday as well, didn't
it?
Yep.
My ongoing war with Papa John's, my Airbnb drama, man, that's a hideous story, my neighbour dying, and Stu's holiday. So have you got any notes you want to share that we're going to get into? Well, we won't jump into them just yet.
No.
Yeah.
Movies that I want to go through, TV series that I've watched, a few bits of music, Pete Tong's Ibiza Classics that I got to film not that long ago. That was a fucking real experience. Probably would do an hour on my fast.
Yep.
Got to go and visit Ed, one of our guests, Ed Skrein, on one of his movie sets over at Chatham Docks. That was a wicked day.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was really nice. 3 days with you, locked in a room.
Yep.
You being Pipkins.
Yep.
And building a pizza oven.
Yep. Stu, have you got anything that you want
to... Yeah, I've tried to embrace my nerd.
Yeah.
I've started watching a certain show.
Yeah, embracing your inner nerd.
Yep.
Battlestar Galactica.
You read a comic as well.
It's all part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some films. I think we should discuss... I know we spoke about it a long time ago on one of the podcasts, but now they've announced that Conor and Mayweather is happening.
I want to put forward that we don't discuss that.
Oh, okay.
Only because it is the most discussed thing in the world at the moment, isn't it?
Okay.
And my thought is, genuinely, and I'll ask you both now, genuinely, do you think there's anything that either of us can add that hasn't already been said or isn't being said constantly?
That's
because if you do, then that's cool. But yeah. I honestly know that I haven't got
anything
that can
add. I think
you
should hold the phone. I feel I've got plenty to add on that.
Yeah.
No. But it might be cool. I don't know a lot. And I know, Stu, I'd like to just generally ask you if you know much about another big fight that's coming up, but it's in the boxing world, which is the Triple G.
Canelo
fight. Yeah. Because I haven't followed fighter
you know
boxing
what?
For a long
I'm
time.
I'm far more up for discussing that. Because again, the Conor thing, we can all argue about it, or we can all say it's shit or it's good.
Yeah.
It's going to happen, and it's not happened yet. So my view is, let's talk about it after it's happened, rather than add to the fucking slew of people talking shit. Go on.
Glastonbury, I'd love to mention that.
Yeah, good shout.
I have put my holiday. Pride.
Yep.
And
your lack of, from looking at your T-shirt, and how you generally look after yourself.
Yeah, like general appearance.
Is that what you're talking about?
No, it's just the Pride event in London.
Because you went on London, didn't you?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, we'll get on to that.
There's been a general election since the last one.
Yeah.
Yeah, there has.
Yep.
How weird.
I was wondering whether we'd go there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I see.
Interesting.
I think that's it.
Well, let's jump in and talk a little bit about podcasts. And after our last drunk cast, actually, it's just after you'd started Hardcore Listing, and I had one guy email me saying, I was listening to the drunk cast, and it was a bit of a greatest hits of previous podcasts. So just quickly to that guy, tune out for a bit, because we're going to do exactly the fucking same.
Yeah, fuck off,
mate.
Because we don't, I listen to all of them, and we discuss, like you guys... Yep. I listen to some of mine. You don't have to listen to all of them, but in general, as it's my network and they're top fives, I try and listen to them all.
We appreciate that, mate.
And I enjoy them, and we don't really discuss them too much. I might, like, if there's some technical things, I might say, here's my thoughts on that, but in general, it's not like we have big chats about
technicalities being Chris, be less of a cunt.
Yeah, I mean, I should mention that because we're in the new studio, I did think it could be good to get your mate Brad to come and film this drunk cast. But then, genuinely, since I've had that thought, everyone he's filmed, Chris has had the inability to realise that, 90% of your listeners are audio?
It's impossible.
Yeah. He will constantly be doing...
It's 99%.
He'll be going, and then I did this. And then, if you do that, and you'll be going... And Jordan was great. Jordan Gray, she kept explaining stuff that Chris was doing for the listeners. But if there's a camera in the room, he has the complete inability to...
Yep.
Be aware that some people aren't watching on camera.
It's a skill, isn't it? It's a skill that I don't currently have.
It's a defect.
Right? It's a skill I don't currently have, but I will improve.
It's cracked me up every time.
But then I'm partly not that interested in improving, because I think part of the charm of our podcast is the fact that we remain consistently unprofessional. I mean, we have cut down on the crunching.
Yeah.
I.e. Stew.
Yeah.
You're getting better at not eating into the microphone now.
Okay.
What have been your... Are your favourites on that? I love the Brett Goldstein one. I thought that was fantastic.
The Brett one was great.
I recommended it, actually, to Bert Kreischer, who's a comedian. He was on Twitter the other day, and we chat every now and then, and he was asking for podcasts, and I recommended part one of the Jordan Gray one, because he likes... gross stuff. I don't think it's your best, but I think Chris thinks that's your best podcast ever.
No.
Absolutely.
I think it was funny, but...
Because it's all about his arse.
Yeah.
But I thought the Brett one was just... Man, he was a guest on here.
Yeah.
I think he was better on your podcast than he was on here.
Oh, okay.
Because I guess stories were kind of forced out of him in that way.
Yeah.
Because he did his top five bad or unusual gig experiences.
Stand-up comedy gigs, yeah. And it was... It was every single one was fucking great, wasn't it? And funny as you like. And he'd come out to Essex, didn't he? Come out to the Whiff Inn and was just really. He's lovely, isn't he? He's just such a top fella. And it was a cracker, that one. I remember.
He's
I don't
lovely.
Necessarily listen back to them all, but I did listen to that, and I phoned you up and I went, "That's really good."
Yeah,
that
yeah,
podcast.
Yeah. Like, completely agree, mate. I think I think the last four or five now. Really have sort of been, when you're saying about our best ones, I think we've sorted out the audio now, predominantly.
Yep.
But I just think that there's a bit more structure to how we're doing things. Only a bit.
Yeah.
But I think just the guests have just been absolutely phenomenal, you know. It's like Brett has been absolutely amazing. We've had like, well, obviously Ed Scrum was really deepened, you know.
He chose one of the best top
five.
So
how did you describe it?
Thug Tears, which was thugged out, emotional thugged out records.
So yeah, it's a gangster or thuggy rappers doing their emotional song that's all deep and mean, which is, that's a great top five.
That was before we'd sorted out the audio.
And mate,
but I adored
Stu pretending he knew any of the songs.
Oh, I was so out of my depth.
Particularly when he'd done a little bit of a research and dropped his knowledge on the wrong track.
Oh,
he was like the sample on this is actually from the sample on this is from that, and then Ed goes, "No, that's my next one."
Oh mate, it's brilliant. We were talking about that yesterday.
You was being horrible to me about it yesterday.
Because he was digging me out about something yesterday, like that I'd said something wrong on the podcast, and he was very quick.
No, we were talking about films.
Hang me out to dry. Oh, that's it. The Ken Livingston fuck up.
Yeah,
but Ken Livingston and. When we had Brett on, we ended up talking about Sexy Beast.
Yeah.
And we said that Ray Winston put in a stellar performance in that. And then Chris said, I thought Ken Livingston was incredible.
And he still thinks that Ken Livingston is exactly like Ben Kingsley, name-wise. Which
I can't tell you. I can't lie to you. That's how my brain adds those words up, mate.
I've got a similar thing. I had a... We had some kind of quiz night going on once, and you had to kind of guess something, and it was potato salad. You couldn't say the word, but you had to describe it. And I said to my brother-in-law, opposite of coleslaw, he went potato salad.
Yeah.
Is it the opposite?
Not at all.
No. So you didn't cut your head off and pretend to chop your head into little tiny pieces and then add mayonnaise into a salad? You didn't go that route to describe a potato salad?
It's only a pub quiz, mate.
Yeah, fair enough. Not everyone thinks you're Mr. Potato Head.
I mean, that's the other thing I thoroughly enjoy is the regular, absolute assumption that every listener has listened to every episode.
Yeah.
You have constant running jokes. It's like 90% of these people don't know what you're talking about with your Mr. Potato Head references.
Yeah. We've actually... The thing that was weird was the fact that we've got, like, companies have contacted us and gone... you guys are right to advertise our product. I mean, if we just give you a kind of loose idea for a script, do whatever you want, and we have just fucked around, haven't we?
Someone
commented today and went, "I've just heard your advert for Harry's Razors.
Lather up my balls!"
and his answer was like, "Did you get paid to do that? That's the best job ever." I just thought,
it was great, isn't it?
We just got to do loads of fucking ridiculous voices, drink
just
some
nonsense.
Booze in my shed, and
I got annoyed when you were talking about killing a fly with your penis. So I think you were putting jam on your belly and then flicking your erection onto it.
That got edited out.
Didn't get edited. But no, the only reason it annoyed me is you came up with a name for it, and I presumed it was all building to... a penis flytrap joke.
Oh, that's good.
And you didn't. And I was like, I thought that was the whole point of that obviously fictional story.
Penis flytrap.
Oh, that's genius.
So you'll have to do that one again.
Yeah.
have to revisit that. I found that with the podcast, one of the good things about it is, or with mine, it's taking me to talk to people I might not have talked to previously with things like the Mustard Tree episode, which is a homeless charity in Manchester. I went up there and had a look around their building and what they do, and there's been numerous things like that, and I found it forces me to do stuff I maybe wouldn't have done. Yours has forced Chris to put a pipe up his arse and pour coffee inside himself.
That's correct.
I mean, when you said that earlier,
feeling
like,
the same?
You know, do we do things for stories? I mean, because all the Craig stuff, I mean, that's all legit.
Because it's stuff that we've discussed as well, in a good way, that we should go and do the zombie thing with Gail and stuff like that. And that's a good thing. Let's do some stuff that we can then... Mm. And the UFCs even. It's a legitimate... Yeah. Like, we want to go anyway, but if we were half and half, it's an extra push to go, oh, that's something to talk about on the next
we don't force anything, do we? No, we certainly don't set out to do something just to so we can talk about a podcast.
The organic coffee enema, that was me just getting a bit carried away.
You didn't even really want to talk about it. I was like, whoa, we are talking about that.
So, again, like, we won't go into huge detail now, but part one of the Jordan Gray episode, you didn't even get to start her top five list because you started talking about Chris giving himself a coffee enema on his kitchen floor on his own. So we won't go any further, but just tune into that episode. But
Jordan was wicked, wasn't she, for that? She played along.
And then came round your house and helped redecorate your flat.
Yeah. I mean,
not specifically the kitchen. It wasn't a result of the coffee. I just had to redecorate after that.
The whole place.
I couldn't go in there again.
The whole job. No, she's a gem. She did that. Yeah.
But yeah, she was great because she's got a show on, what's the station?
Phoenix
FM. And that showed on that episode because it showed that she started hosting now, because every now and then she'd jump in and start to lead things, and that was dope. But I've obviously had the Goldie episode happen.
Yes.
Since our last one. That's the first time the podcast has been a literally worldwide news story. It was on the news in Australia on TV. It was on CNN in America. It was on German news. It was in every paper in the UK, including like music papers and all of these, and all because the first report was kind of vague and half. I'm convinced that all the people who reported on it haven't listened to the podcast, because they all quote how he. In case you haven't listened, supposedly he named or unveiled Banksy. And they say, he says Robert.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to it, he could say Rob, he could say Robert, he could say Robin, he could say... I thought he said Robbo, and there's a lot of rumours it was King Robbo, and then it's been passed on and so on and so forth. And yeah, it was just hilarious. I mean, we were cracking up at it, and were genuinely, me and Goldie, like, at first I was a little nervous, because I was like, I know he hadn't said anything, but it started to become this huge news story.
Mm.
And then as soon as I knew the Banksy found it amusing, and 3D, who's Robert in Massive Attack, found it amusing, then I was off at the races. Yeah. Like, this is great.
You relaxed once you knew that Banksy, who is Robert Del Naja, had found it funny. I found it interesting, and I could understand why it sort of like got the momentum in it. Well, that's kind of good for you,
the
mate.
The thing
really
that benefited me was, if you Google it, there's been articles about it being Robert from Massive Attack. There's been articles about it being King Robbo.
King Robbo. Yeah.
And there's because been articles about it being a guy called Robin from
middle
Bristol.
Class dude. Right. Yeah.
So I was like, the fact that they're all out there and this was suddenly a big news story, it's like, he said Rob. That doesn't clarify in any way. I guess it confirms that you're in the right direction, but... Mm. Mate, it was mad seeing that. And the fact that all of them quoted the fact that, because, in fact, let's call this out. It's a listener that started it.
Yeah.
And that's not a problem, I guess. No. It was good press. But all of the quotes were from a listener. So someone you'd kind of assume has sold the story, would that? Or would it just be as given the story away? I don't know.
I definitely wouldn't say...
But it was all the same quote, wasn't
it? But they would put it out. But what I do think it is...
It was all the same person quote.
Well, no, when you look at... Because I had a look at that, you know, just out of curiosity.
Copy and paste on...
Wanted to make you feel bad about it as well. I was trying to go, no, this is a big deal, mate. Oh, fucking hell. But when I was looking through the news stories, it is this thing that we're seeing constantly, time and time again now, this regurgitation... of something else, because no one could be fucked to actually look into it, so they're copy and pasting. There's about three or four blogs, news channels, and they were word for word.
Absolutely.
It's the same thing, just regurgitating.
Big newspapers as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely a word for word. But yeah, the thing that amused me was it stated that he changed the subject quite abruptly. And if you've listened to that episode, I mean, I love Goldie, but God damn, he changes the subject abruptly.
He was here there in every sentence.
That's how Goldie is. That if you know him, you know that. But in general, if you listen, if you've actually heard the podcast, which again, that's why I'm convinced none of the journalists have, or they're just making a bit of a story. Fine in itself. But
that was one thing that, like, a lot of my friends, you know, don't listen to podcasts and don't really know about what the podcasting that I do and whatnot, or ever come to the club nights. And I was getting phone calls like, "Here, know your mate with a beard? You've seen him. He knows Banksy." And I was getting all sorts of phone calls and messages on social media from people that never mention anything.
Was talking to B Ducks, who's mugged you off before on Chris.
Yeah, I know. Buckethead, silly little buckethead bastard boy.
Or something like that.
Ooh.
Just a mate of Pip's. And I'm just kind of like, who is this person?
But yeah, anyway, and she was on a train and I was saying, this Banksy stuff's blowing up a bit. And she's like, literally, I'm sat here overhearing two separate groups of people discussing it. And it was like, that's mental when it's just in the in the world like that.
Can I mention the conversation I had when I was out running a couple of weeks ago?
Sure. I mean, I assume so.
So I'm out with a dog having my morning run.
Yeah.
And van, back doors open, fellow unloading stuff at the back. Turns around, looks at me as I'm running down the street. Stuart with him. And I was like, yeah, all right. So I stopped and he went, oh, you ain't got to stop, mate. I went, oh, all right, sorry. And he went, look. And he then leant into his cab and turned his stereo up and was listening to the podcast.
Amazing.
And I was like,
that's wicked.
It's
mad, isn't it?
Like, yeah, it's amazing.
It's mad how it can all grow. And the weird thing with, because it's weird, on the Banksy thing, I only spoke to you and Irvine about it, really. I wasn't getting tons and tons of messages.
Were you getting hit up about, like, by the press and that to comment?
Before it came out, I had the Mirror and the Mail hit me up asking if they can use a sample of the audio. And I said no, because the point of podcasts is that it's not sound bites.
Yeah.
The point of starting this podcast was it's a long form interview.
Yeah, of course.
It's not exploiting this person said this. And it was the same when I had Rory McDonald on. Like, all three of us are big MMA fans, and we read a lot of the MMA blogs.
Yep.
There were things he said in that if I had isolated and sent to MMA blogs, it'd be a news story. And now Rogan doesn't do that, but because all the MMA journalists tune into Rogan, anything that's said on there will become a news story in the MMA world.
Yeah.
I could have done that, but I went, no, that's not the point of podcasts. It's about this long form thing. And it was the same on that. I just, when I was approached, I just said, nah, I'm not interested. That's not cool. It's annoying because
raise money about.
I just said outright, I was like, no, you can't. It's annoying because I think it was The Independent was one that took the clip without asking me and played it and had advertising on it.
And
that annoyed
me
a bit because they're making money off of my audio. And it's like, either way, I would have said no. I would have said, look, you can. And again, it's not me being overly righteous. Come and listen to it on the podcast.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And give me listens and give me views or whatever. And a lot of people said, like, was the listeners' figures through the roof? They were up a bit, but I think people are unaware of the fact that in this day and age, you're barely willing to read past a headline,
let alone go and download
a 90-minute podcast.
People just take that as a given.
Most people will have read that and gone, all right, well, I've got my information. And they will now be saying, he unveiled it.
Yeah.
Having not listened.
Mm.
It's interesting, I had similar today. I did a post. I got my favourite tweet ever today. I'll read it out to you in a minute. But I did a post of the top 12 downloaded episodes ever. And I knew that it happened because this always happens. There's only one girl in it. It's why I did the next top 12, because there was three in that. And the top 12 of this year so far, because there's four in it. So it's an evolving thing. And I did a post a while ago asking for more recommendations of a female guest to have on, because whilst I don't book based on gender, I think we are, by being in the entertainment industry, we're part of an industry that through years of patriarchy is channeled towards men. So I think whilst it's not right to book based on gender, it's okay to try and make some moves to rebalance that and try and actively say, well, I don't want just women on, but if there's some interesting women that'd be good for the podcast, then that's a good thing to do.
Equal opportunity isn't always about being equal to everyone. Equal opportunity is sometimes about giving people a leg up, whether that be gender, sex, race.
Yeah completely. And it's definitely, it's an industry entertainment that has been that way for a long time. So yeah, I did that, and I knew there'd be some backlash, but I made a point. I did a post on Facebook. I've posted the Polaroid photo of every a female guest I've had on, because my point is, I'm doing my bit to have more women on and have that variation. But equally, if you're someone who's going to notice that as a problem, then noticing it isn't enough, in my opinion. Actively become part of making that change.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Here's all the female guests I've had. I've said before, of this year, I think the best episode I've had is Sophia Batella.
Yeah.
I think she was absolutely amazing. So post about it. If you're a listener and you're unhappy about the fact that the most downloaded episodes are men, make some noise about the refugee special I had with Ramel or the safe housing for women special with Mira. Or
Josie
go
Long.
Celebrity route, Josie Long. Kathy Burke is one of the best episodes. Gail Porter is one of your best episodes and my best episodes. But again, it's on this misreading thing. A girl who's a journalist, I believe, tweeted me saying how it's a lot of white men. And I was like, yeah, man, that's kind of... It's a shame, kind of thing. But, you know, I do notice that less people post about the ones that have got women's. Hopefully that can change. And it went back and forth, but it was all friendly. And someone else jumped in, and I responded to them laughing. The person who jumped in is my favourite tweet I've ever had. And then the girl who did the original tweet said, look, you chose your top 12, and I just highlighted that it's mainly white males. And I had to go back and go, I didn't choose my top 12. In the post it says, these are the top 12 most downloaded.
Yeah,
it's not my top 12. So again, it was the fact that all of that interaction was based off someone not reading a tweet completely, which is where I've come to that from the misperception of Guardian or whatever else, or whatever paper is reporting. But the tweet I got in response to that, this woman retweeted it and said, oh, it's a lot of white males. And I got a tweet from, I'm not going to say his name or give him, again, don't go and give any hate or abuse because it's the most hilarious tweet ever, but it just said, based on his judging of the best of all 2014 fancy dress contest, Scroobius Pip is a misogynist of the highest order. which is my favourite tweet. But number one, why are you basing anything on someone's judging? And I don't know if I gave... If I picked too many women or too few women, because either way that could be sexist or misogynistic.
I'm hoping you picked too many women. I need to see this.
Is it bad that my instant thought was, have they mistaken me for Dan Lesac?
Brilliant.
Just because you know that Dan's had a lot. His type of humour on stage has always been quite bawdy. And I was like, but yeah, I just thought that was amazing. I don't remember any incidents. I remember being asked at some point to judge a last minute thing from Rob the Banks. It's not something I'd trained or prepared for.
Yeah.
I wasn't even in fancy dress, so I had no right. But yeah.
It's so interesting. I'm not saying we need to...
And a misogynist of the highest order. Mm. It's like, that's not the highest order. There's some horrible shit that goes down. There's some horrendous misogyny that goes down.
Well, you're
down
up there with it.
We all thought Craig was somehow a misogynist, but you're well above
There's
that.
Very little misogyny in this world that's any worse than the judging of a fancy dress contest. I think if that is the case, then we're in a really good place for equality. Spoiler alert, I don't think we're in a really good place for equality. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done. But yeah.
I think there is a lot of work that needs to be done. But I do think that, you know, I see a lot of just it going so far left now with that. And the hate on white males a lot of the time that's been cast your way. And you aren't any of those things. And And it makes me sad to think that. Like, I mean, can I just say one other thing, on, like, with go regards on, to your...
Can I just mention, though, as you were saying that, in 4 weeks, I've got Laurie Penny on the podcast, who is a writer and journalist who speaks a lot about feminism. Yeah, and it's a really interesting episode, because she pulls me up on a couple of things that potentially I had the wrong outlook on, and we have a really good discussion on that. Because I think you're right, but I also think... a lot of people who say that then get overly defensive as a white male. I think there is a lot of problems from the perspective of the white male. I think the white male is, or the root of a lot of problems. That's not to say all white males are horrible or anything like that, but it is something that I feel that we have to take a step back sometimes. Like I said to Laurie Penny in this episode, I don't identify as a feminist, but purely because of discomfort in doing so. As a white male, I feel I have a level of privilege in life that means I can't to claim to fully understand and relate to the stuff that women have to go through feels fake. I can't do that. I completely agree with everything in feminism, in real feminism. Obviously, there's going to be extremes and so on and so forth, but I completely agree and support everything in feminism, but I personally feel uncomfortable claiming to be a feminist because I'm a white male. It's fucking way easier for me than it is for a female. You know, in general.
I think so. But
that's not against anyone who does.
You can empathise with that.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of my friends, a lot of my best girl mates are feminists, extreme, and they go through varying shades from sort of like the feminist principles that I concur with and believe in to militant feminists.
Yeah.
And you know, and so we talk a lot about this on Facebook that I don't disassociate with anyone posting anything, even if they have extreme religious beliefs or social political ones. I won't detach. I want to read and see what the arguments are. But I see the far end of feminism, and it scares the life out of me sometimes. Yeah. And it is about having that balance. The point I wanted to make was with regards to you know that you, the bloody most downloaded, women. The most right. downloaded have been white men.
Yeah.
But then if you talk about NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and where your fan base is going to come from. Mm-hmm. You being a white man means that you will slip straight under the radar of white dudes and go, oh, right, maybe because of conditional programming, that would be something I want to listen to.
It's one of the things...
Despite you not being a misogynist, it's
one of the reasons I've actively felt it's necessary to seek out more of a female guest because of that. Because I know there's going to be some subconscious programming that says, because I don't have a booker, or a program, or anyone else who organises this for me, as a white male of in my mid-30s, the bulk of my social circle is going to be white males in my mid-30s. Mm. You know, that's why the bulk of my guests are white males from, say, 25 to 45. That's kind of the range of that. And there has been variation, but that's it. But what you were saying there on... my thought is, on feminism, the same as... issues with a black culture in America.
Yeah.
I think black people in that situation are the most qualified to speak on that. Mm-hmm. I think they're not the only people who can solve it. Obviously, it needs white people involved in the solution.
Yeah.
Same with feminism needs men involved in the solution. But I feel it's women that maybe need to lead that discussion and help us out. And me and Laurie Penny talk about this, that you have to have that openness to the fact it'll take even just men a longer time to get on the right page on feminism than it will a women, because we're outside looking in. That's the same in any group. If you're developing, and it's all stuff that's developing quickly, and Jordan Grace speaks on this in trans culture, it's developing quickly within the community. So Jordan will have certain terms that she feels acceptable and won't know other terms that are or aren't acceptable. It's this developing thing. So it's going to be even longer for those outside of it to see that. But I wanted to mention as well, I'm helping at the moment Rebecca Crow, who is with the wonderful Jimmy Havoc, who's going to come on the podcast at some point. I want him on the Drunkcast. He's great on Tuesday Night Jaw. He did an episode with Jim. Just his life's just fascinating. The death matches he's done and stuff like that. I recommend you listen to that one, and then we'll have him on a drunk cast.
We had something to tweet with him not that long ago, before one of the progress fights. It was me, you, Ed, my boyfriend, and Jimmy. And it was wicked, man. Was just hanging out with him and having a good
chat. But anyway, again, it's biased there that I've spoken about a girl and instantly said, oh, she's the partner of. which is stupid. Which is what Bridget Christie gets all the time. Like, Bridget Christie always gets, oh, she's Stuart Lee's wife. So, it's not relevant. So, yeah, again, just, but that's the context of someone who's coming on the podcast. But I'm helping Rebecca Crow set up her podcast because she wants to do a podcast that's kind of a feminist thing or a voice for alt girls because she's an alternative model.
Yep.
And again, there's different areas of feminism. I think there's areas of feminism who feel that the over-sexualization of the female gender is put forward by the male-dominated industries and so on and so forth. But there's a lot of women I know who are in that industry like,
No, they want to embrace it.
It's empowering. Mm. This is what I do. I'm proud of myself. I'm proud of what I'm doing.
There are huge schisms in feminism. And I think, again, that's...
But that's why I think it's exciting to have Rebecca Crow discussing it and talking on it, because no matter how well-intended you and I are, we could put our foot in our mouth and... Quite rightfully, we could be wrong and be called out on it.
No, and but
whereas if you are a woman in that industry, it's kind of easier to have those debates and
dudes need to talk about it
completely,
and, 100%. and get it wrong.
And
I
hope that she has women and men on there,
For sure,
to discuss it. But yeah, I always feel it's tough to discuss issues of race or issues of sexuality as a closed group. Three white men are sitting here discussing it is tough.
Well, it means some men and some women could be wrong, some white men and some men of different races
is, in my mind, is a far more productive.
It is, but it's not always possible because we haven't all been integrated. So you might not have that immediately in your social group. Yeah, it is more productive to do that, but it doesn't mean to say conversation will always
be 100%. It should happen anyway. There should be these conversations.
One thing I found really interesting on the subject of feminism and a good one to watch. Have you watched The Red Pill?
No.
So The Red Pill, and it's something that a lot of memes and Reddit and a lot of 4chan people talk about being red-pilled and whatnot, which is an antithesis for feminism. It was a documentary written by a feminist who had written, who'd done a lot of other really credible award-winning documentaries. And she wanted to do one about feminism. Mm-hmm. She very soon came onto the men's rights activists and didn't like them because she felt that what they were saying was to suppress women's rights. Mm-hmm. And through her investigations, she started understanding really where men's rights activists come from.
Yep.
And her conclusions on that and the effects of feminism and breaking down feminism from sort of like the 50s and 40s to what feminism is now. Yeah. And it's fucking fascinating because it's written and done by a woman who spent, I think it was a year, interviewing everyone across the board about it. And she is a feminist, or she might not be now. You need to look into it.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting because I think about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I come to the conclusion I wasn't strictly a feminist per se. I think when I was younger,
you hate women, didn't you?
I hate the pose. But I think for years I felt I identified as one because I was surrounded by so many women who were awesome and taught me so much about women and how my perspective was so male dominated. When we look at, you know, even when we talk about a lot of the faux pas that Craig has done and his behaviour, there is that a lot of that is ignorant and boisterous
and sexy
and very sexy, surprisingly sexy. But yeah, they've helped me grow.
Mm.
But I think about 2 years ago now, I started seeing loads of stuff, and it started putting me off of identifying strictly as a feminist per se.
Again, it's just as I said, the Jordan Gray episode that I had was fantastic because I was asking her all these questions about trans culture. And she had to almost sit me down and stop me and go, you know, I can only answer for myself.
Yeah,
I can't speak for all trans people. Yeah, yeah. And it's a similar thing. And it's going to be different levels and variations. I did a post about Pride because you went to London Pride and I missed it. And I did a post just of a list of Pride events around the country because a friend of mine had kind of talked about the fact that a London Pride in particular has a lot of support from straight people. And that's wicked.
There was loads of gays there, though.
Yeah, there's loads of gays there.
There was loads.
How many? They didn't outnumber the straights, did they?
But, I reckon, yeah, hundreds.
Hundreds. Oh. But their point was London is quite a liberal city.
That's I'd like to touch on this.
It's why I did this post saying, look, here's different ones around the country. Maybe in cities where it's even harder to be. I was going to say it's harder to be gay. But again, even if you're in a liberal setting, it's what someone argues. As someone said to me, when's... And again, this is such a sentence, but when's heterosexual pride day? And I kind of, this person wasn't a meathead or rude. They were trying to be articulate, but they were just a bit misguided, in my opinion. And my point was, look, I do believe that sexuality shouldn't even be being discussed. It should just be.
Yeah, but it has to. Thing. It has to.
Has to at this stage still, because they're every gay person I know, let's say at least. Once a month, I'd probably up it to once a week, has some kind of interaction with prejudice against that.
But this is what
whether it be someone actively attacking them online or in person, or someone just tutting or giving them a look or whatever else, it's something that constantly makes them feel uncomfortable. So pride is needed. But my point was, if you're particularly as, again, a white straight male or white straight female, which is potentially an easier or less persecuted situation. If you want to go and support, if you can, try going and supporting the pride events in places that it's maybe even more challenging to be.
Yeah, I guess so.
Again, that's not to say don't go to London. That's an amazing event and it looks perfect. But yeah, it's something that struck me, that there are still a lot of smaller towns or more out there towns that it's really fucking tough. Well, and the pride parades are small and sometimes get in some dirty looks as you work through
completely.
Them.
So I went to Pride and I took the kids to Pride and I wanted to.
Which I mean, I want to just say quickly, I think is fantastic and positive, and what more people should be doing. Yeah. The fact you took your girls along and were like, this is everything's okay.
Yeah,
everything is positive.
I think it's a mistake. I think you're going to turn them into lesbians.
Craig, ladies and gentlemen. I thought that was great.
It was amazing. It was so cool.
And it shouldn't. It's sad because that shouldn't be a big deal.
No, it's not.
You know
a big deal.
It is still something I look at and go, "That's good." It shouldn't be. It should just be.
And I thought it was lovely seeing the photos of you. Sorry, we'll let you speak, Stu. But it was really cool, man. See you and the girls having such a laugh was just like it was a nice.
It was cracking. And I tell you what, it was very strange because on the way up there, it was on a train and it was like. This is going to have a great day, and I was talking to my eldest, and I was sort of saying, like, you know, one of her friends, he's that they seem to think that he's gay, and I said, like, so how does that impacted on you know your year, your friends, like, is it a big issue to anyone? Like, does he get any grief because of it? And it was so nice to just hear her just go, no one really cares. And I just think, if that generation
particularly in our area,
this was where I was going with it. So we've ended up, obviously we went up to London and it was amazing. And I will get back to coming back to Grays, because that's kind of where I want to, how the day ended, obviously. There was certain moments at Pride where crowds... singing at festivals makes me emotional.
Yeah, right? Totally.
And it's something strange about, like, when you hear crowds sing songs, it really chokes me up.
Totally agree, mate. 100%. Coldplay for me at Glastonbury last year.
Anything like that. Glastonbury, I can be watching a band I don't even really like, but if I hear a crowd sing it, it makes me emotional.
I remember I was driving home once and I heard on Absolute a Bon Jovi gig live, and I think Bon Jovi are all right. I quite like him a bit, but it's not like I'm a massive fan.
Yeah.
But hearing certain songs and him just play the first call and a whole stadium sing, I was welling up. And I'm someone who performs and does that, but still it was mate, dead or alive, you're just the crowd singing, oh, mate, it got me. But go on.
And we literally just heard this roar and there was no...
That's Stu Whiffin off the Hardcore Listening Podcast.
Look at the size of his potato head. Like, but... Like, everyone cheered, and there was no kind of procession going past. at that point. And so you're sort of looking everywhere to see what everyone's cheering about. And then there was this huge, like, barrage of balloons just saying, fuck the DUP.
Yeah.
And, like, and the
I had a few people tweet me about that, saying that was the...
fucking amazing. Yeah. And, like, it was really good.
People, I posted about this during the Manchester gig. And I tuned into some of that, and it got me.
Yeah.
And I did a post just saying, you can be as snobby as you like about pop music, but when it comes to uniting people in one emotional thing, there's nothing like it.
I forgot about that.
There were so many things that were just so many bits, and when Noel Gallagher came out and...
Yeah, Liam.
Liam. I made a point of saying, because a few people were tweeting, it's so sad that the Gallaghers couldn't just get over their issues for this. And I just tweeted saying, mate, we can't let the terrorists win. The hatred that the Gallaghers have is stronger than ISIS. ISIS can't beat the Gallaghers' hatred for each other. It's like, we can't allow, what they want.
Yeah.
It's what they fucking want.
Yeah.
Liam said, where's our kid for that?
But the beauty of that was just amazing. And numerous songs there. Just the cheesy... Miley Cyrus... singing some pop song with Ariana Grande. I was welling up.
So was I.
It's not even a song I particularly like, and it's beautiful.
It's
seeing her come out and sing, because, you know, it doesn't matter about what your pop sensibilities are.
Yeah.
She had a concert where, 20 plus people died in an explosion.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who you are, whether you like their music. Wonder what the fuck? How did that make her fucking feel? She could have gone
unimaginable.
And disappeared, for years after something like that. Instead, she went back and performed in Manchester
and brought some people along.
Brought motherfuckers out, man, and that's cool. That will always get me.
It's the singing along, but when it means something as well. And the best example I've had of that, and I was in pieces. I saw a Cyndi Lauper. And you know I'm a big Lauper fan. I think I was annoyed on your discussion of female vocalists on today's Hardcore Listening that Lauper didn't come up, because generally she's got her pop songs, but then the notes that she hits sometimes. But anyway, we won't go into that. But it didn't even cross my mind. But she did True Colours.
Yeah.
And just her and a slide guitar-y thing. Yeah. And it was in Brighton, which is obviously a massive gay capital of the UK. And the whole stadium just singing a lot. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen, because it meant so much to everyone there. It was like, I love that shit.
So we finish at Pride, and we jump on the train to come home. And it's London to Grays, is what, half hour.
Yep.
And we're going through Dagenham, Purfleet, Rainham. And these are all probably not the most open-minded.
They're not that progressive, are they?
That's a good word, yeah.
The closer you get to Thurrock, which is where we live, the stronger... I mean, geographically on the map, the stronger traditionally the UKIP hold.
Previously,
BNP.
Yeah.
That's not saying it's everyone, but...
When you go for Grave Station, that is Grave Riverside, and that was a BNP stronghold for years.
Yeah. And it's one of the places that the Nigel Farage came to and visited on election day. That just gives a bit of...
Yeah.
That's where we live.
And I think it was after Nick Griffin appeared on Question Time and he got roasted by everyone. He went to Grand Uncle Find Him, and the next day he was outside the Working Men's Club in Grays Riverside. Yeah, which is where that train station is that we got off. And I got off with the kids and my wife, and we'd parked sort of just not too far from the station. But two young lads, probably 18, maybe 19, had rainbow flags that they'd kind of tied around their neck as capes.
Yeah.
And they'd kind of got off at Grave Station and was walking to cross the road to walk through Grave High Street. And I said to my missus, we can't go in the car yet. I said, I've got to follow them down that road because they will. Because I'm not having it in my town. No, but I just thought...
There's one thing in London.
Yeah.
It's another thing around my neck.
You don't shit on your own doorstep. No, but I thought, I've got to go and keep an eye on them. Because the chances are...
They're going to start kissing and stuff.
No, they will. The bottom line is that they're probably going to get shit off of someone.
Yeah. Like, because someone's going to abuse them. Yeah. Someone's going
like,
to
give them. And that's what I said. I just thought it was so weird that in just 15 miles, you can walk around holding hands with the person you love.
Yeah.
And be completely relaxed. Yeah. And be who you are.
And then a short train journey.
You have to not be who you are. Yeah. You can't embrace the person you love. You can't you can't express yourself. And
yeah, you're in a crowd of wonderful, accepting people. Yeah. A half-hour train journey and some potato heads following you. But yeah, no, that's it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, let's speak for a little bit then on a club night that you were involved with for a long time of the Fat Surfer in Grays. And I've got my history with the Fat Surfer.
Yep.
I've fallen out with some of the people there.
I
love Surfer Steve. I love Jim. I love the core of the people involved.
Yep.
There were certain things that made me stop going there. As you know, as we've discussed before, there was an article where it was miswritten that I was hating on the Fat Surfer. I wasn't, but I'd stopped going to the Fat Surfer because I got turned down because I had a suit on.
So the Fat Surfer was...
it was an alternative club.
Within Grey's Working Men's Club.
But that's what I want to highlight as how important that club was, because...
It was a game of two halves.
Despite my personal experiences with some... But I said I got turned away, and if you listen to the podcast, you've heard me talk about our mutual friend, Jay. After his funeral, I went there in my suit. And to be honest, I wanted to be away from people who knew Jay. And we'd had a beautiful day. It was a beautiful funeral, but it was emotional.
Is this your friend that took his own life?
Yeah. And I was like, right, I knew all my mates from HMV and that were at the Fat Surfer that night. And I was like, I just want to go there and not think about it. Do you know what I mean? It was beautiful. It was an experience, but it was fucking draining and painful and exhausting. So I went straight there and I was in a suit. And they wouldn't let me in because I was dressed too smart. And that, the reason I, as you will know as well, the reason I never came with you guys to Jumpin' Jacks or any of these other places was I ain't going to put shoes on to get into a club.
Mm. So
I'm
going
to go to a club however I want. So the fact that the clubs I go to because you don't have a dress code, I was getting turned away. I was like, mate, that's such a...
Well, that's really weird you say that, right? Because...
Should have come with me to Jumpin' Jacks that night.
What's wrong?
But anyway, that aside, that's not what I want to talk about at all. And I don't want to say anything negative, because that was the security. That's not the Fat Surfer. A club like the Fat Surfer, particularly in Grey's Working Men's Club, which was owned, or the meetings for UKIP and the BNP were in the in the hall above.
Yep.
And it was a lot of rough people in that club, except on the Fat Surfer night. And there will be some, but that was a place of acceptance because it was an alternative night. So you could go there and be whatever the fuck you are. And you speak of it being uncomfortable, walking through Grays as a gay person. I'm at that time as well, walking through Grays as a goth. Well, you're going to expect abuse.
It's important to point out at this point that club is no more because a young lad did walk out of there who was an alternative music lover and expressed that in the way he looked and how he carried himself. And he's paralysed and was beaten within an inch of his inch of his life. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and so that club at that point, that was pretty much the end of it.
Yeah. And again, it's a shame because as said, is closing a club like that the right reaction? Because the club isn't at the wrong there.
Well, no, it wasn't closing the club. We obviously tried to carry it on.
Yeah.
But, bear in mind, it was predominantly because we had a 16 plus license there. Yeah. So we could let people in that were 16 plus, but they had to present ID at the bar, etc. But if your 16-year-old daughter or son wants to go to Grey's Working Men's Club where a guy has been attacked and viciously, beaten. Mauled, what parents going to let their children go anywhere near there?
Yeah.
Even if I was, my daughter was 18 and she was, I'm going, no, you're not. You know?
To reiterate what we're highlighting here, though, is the power and importance of clubs like that and the alternative clubs.
Yeah, of course.
Particularly in towns like Grays or in Essex in general.
Yeah.
To give people who aren't the norm as such a place to go, a safe place to enjoy yourself. If you're homosexual, if you're goth, if you're metal, if you're whatever, if you're just a bit different.
Yeah.
The beauty of places, I like that to go. And I guess it's changed a bit now we've got the internet and you can have that greater interaction with people of the same thinking. But no, particularly in our time, having people who are into the same music as you.
You nailed it. You nailed it on the Pink Toothbrush documentary when you said that you got all poignant. And I thought, why has he not said something stupid? Because it's something that I'm involved in. And you laced it so well. You went like, you know, because whatever college or school you went to, there was always a couple of guys that were into alternative music. And at the Toothbrush, you know, there was all of them people come together, which was good. Because what if the two guys are into alternative music at your college with dickheads?
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to be stuck hanging out with only those two guys. So it's great to meet that variation.
I think that's
a good point. I know you talk about it a bit on Hardcore Listening. I mean, I do think somehow Hardcore Listening is sponsored by V Festival because it comes up every fucking episode. And it's not even that you're saying it's good, but every other episode you're like, yeah, V Festival used to be good.
Well, I just think because of where it is, obviously it's not far from here, and it was.
It's the one festival I told my agent I never wanted to play.
Yeah.
And we said that outright, and it was because, and again, this is going off track, but to counter what Chris said on the podcast, and again, it's weird listening to the Hardcore Listening, because it's people I know having conversations about stuff I would normally be having conversations with them with, and I can't chip in.
Yeah.
But the thing with, because Chris, you'd said that V97 or whatever was good.
Yeah.
And then it turned shit.
Yeah, around, I don't know, a couple of years after it must have gone.
My feeling, because I remember the first time I went to V, and I thought I enjoyed it. It was V97. I was there the same year as you guys. I met up with you guys briefly at some point, I think. But I thought at that time, oh, this is a plastic festival.
Right.
Because at that point, I'd already been to Glastonbury and Reading.
Right. Yeah.
So I think, and it was interesting because Ollie from A Day for Guitar Pop.
Yeah.
I was saying the same thing. Yet he went to one 5 years later. So I think it is the fact, it's more, people from Essex, their first festival is V.
Yeah.
Then they go off to real festivals. They go off to real festivals, then they come back and go, oh, this is shit.
No, I tell you why that's different. Is because I understand what you're saying, but the festival did change as well. Like, you're right in a sense
But again, my point on that as well is, I don't think, I disagree that the festival changed.
I don't.
I think...
It did change.
Wait. I think the pop charts changed.
When
we were going, indie and rock was owning the pop charts, so it was all good stuff. Then they suddenly, as you said in the podcast, they started having a lot of these pop acts. Like, no, they always had pop acts. It's just when we were going, the music that we were into was doing good in the charts because of Oasis, because of Blur, because of this. Whereas 5 years down the line, when that's dropped out of the charts, they're having the Saturdays and shit like that. It's like, it's because they're in the charts. That was always the case. Mm. So it changed musically, but as a reflection of what is currently popular in the charts.
But even in 97, the Spice Girls were probably the biggest band in the world, but they weren't playing V, were they?
And the thing is, you, there's a degree of truth in that, but if the music changes, then it does affect the fact that the clientele changes and it does become a different atmosphere. Mm. So that it is a different festival. Because people like us
would have stopped going because of the lineup.
And it's relative to you because you went to Glastow and Reading. And when I did go on to Reading and Glastonbury, I was like, oh, fucking hell, my God. Yeah. That is really it. But isolated V, and you are right, music policy had changed. And maybe that was it. But that then that did have an effect on that experience.
It changed with the charts rather than any... Again, it's almost defending V, which is said. It has no integrity.
It chases a pan note.
It was my favourite experience was watching The Prodigy, and it was amazing. But Firestarter was number one in the pop charts.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And it was all that. That's why that was there. So I don't feel it sold its soul as such. I just think there was a we, or not we all, but we maybe gave it more soul than it actually ever had.
Oh, I don't think so.
We assumed it had this song.
The year that the Strokes and the Pixies headlined, they weren't top of the charts.
The Strokes were.
Not at that point, they weren't. That was like maybe third album. I think they just realised that maybe alternative music wasn't as big. Commercially. And so they just thought, right, we're in the middle of Essex and lots of people like bad music around here. Let's just put a bit more of that on and keep it busy.
Crossover as well, though, because I remember when Blur and Oasis became the biggest thing, and it was a weird mix because I remember them being booked at Reading, and suddenly I went to Reading and it felt like V. Because whilst they're alternative bands, they had a similar audience to what the rowdy or the less alternative music based crowds.
Well,
the Via tracks have, and I remember seeing for the first time I'd seen fights kicking off at Reading and stuff like that, which I hadn't seen before. In general, it was a festival; everyone's there just having fun.
I think I've said it before that I don't know if I've said it on the drunk cast, but I think when the Blur and Oasis thing, as much as it was one of the most exciting times you could ever DJ in an alternative club, signalled the end of, and I put inverted commas, indie music and indie scene. You know, it pretty much, to me, introduced that music to football terraces.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, and it was just the fact that I've always said, like, before that, you know, you had big movements like, let's say, for instance, like grunge, you know, and Nirvana were huge, but your average kind of person that, I don't know how to describe them, would still, you know, yeah, he's scruffy though, isn't he? He needs a wash. But then all of a sudden, when you've got Liam and Noel walking out wearing, you know, Arrington's and you know, Stone Island or whatever they were wearing, and, you know, gazelles and having sharp haircuts talking about football, fighting, fucking and stuff like that, then all of a sudden, geezers like them.
I mean, it's history repeating itself, right? Because the mod movement was very much looked upon by the punk and alternative scenes at the time of the commercialisation of the alternative. And I now look at The Who and The Jam and all of these as legendary and amazing, but I can see at the time, The Jam, after the Jam started off very much in the punk scene with The Clash and with The Pistols, and then were this clean, seemed like this cleaner version. So again, I guess it's a repeat of that, right? It suddenly got taken on by the pop charts, regardless of the credibility of the music. Because again, I'm not even the biggest Oasis fan, but they've written some fucking tunes.
Yeah.
They've written some amazing albums. But I completely agree. I got to the point where I was like, fuck this stuff. Well, Streets are another example.
Yeah.
I think The Streets are a great example. I never stopped liking The Streets' music, but I started to stop liking who they appeal to.
Well, it's really weird because Blur, as much as they're nowhere near one of my favourite bands, are probably the band I've seen the most. I've seen them a lot. And I've seen them in pubs and tiny little gigs. And I then saw them when The Great Escape come out. When Country Ass and all of that. Charmless Man. And I went to Wembley Arena to see him. And I think I was probably the tallest person there. And I remember walking in and just thinking, it's just 14-year-old girls. And it was like...
Sweet.
No, but it was like, they were like screaming. Like it was,
to clarify, Stu was younger then.
No, I was probably like maybe 20, 21, and
he's still frowned upon. It's frowned upon.
No, it is illegal. Just to clarify, Chris, and to everyone listening, it's definitely illegal. Any 21-year-olds listening, don't go near 14-year-olds.
But at that point, Blur had become a proper pop band.
I was on the Blur side of things. I love Blur. I thought they were fucking awesome. And that was, again, it was crazy how that went, because I was listening to Rancid and Operation Ivy and all that kind of thing. And then that first Oasis album came out and the first couple of Blur albums.
Yeah.
And you kind of got tricked into what ended up being a big pop band.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, it's got that same attitude. It's got that same feeling. It's like, oh, hang on, I'm listening to the pop charts now.
Yeah.
I love it.
But, It's never been the same.
Whose phone is that?
It's mine. Mate. I'm really sorry.
It's yeah, fucking hell. It's normally Chris.
I know. And I actually mouthed off about you doing that.
Wow. Yeah. Before we got going, he was like, how long is it going to be before Chris's phone goes off? Because it does go off in most episodes.
It does, even yesterday. It's unbelievable.
Stone Cold Steve Austin has a rule on his podcast, and I'm going to mention this because of the drunk cast. He's a wrestler.
Oh, okay.
He's got a genuinely good podcast, though. He's
hilarious.
He
came back last year. He took out all
the... Chris was around mine one time and goes, you've seen Stone Cold's come back, and I follow wrestling. I'm not ashamed of it, but I follow it big time. It's like, you've seen Stone Cold's come back. It's like, no, he hasn't, Chris. And Chris was like, yep, and showed me a video that someone had posted on Facebook, and it's a video from literally 1998. And Chris has just seen it and gone, oh, Stone Cold's back.
I don't even follow wrestling that much. I was getting pumped up, thinking he'd just come back.
Anyway, he's got a really good podcast, and he's one of the people responsible for podcasts being as big as they are, genuinely, along with Joe Rogan and that. He started a podcast because he was kind of depressed because he'd stopped his wrestling career, but didn't know what to do. And Stone Cold, arguably, is the biggest wrestler ever.
Yeah.
He ended up selling more merch than Hulk Hogan, than all of these. Anyway, he's got a rule in his podcast. If his phone goes off during the podcast, he owes anyone who's listening a drink. So if they ever bump into him,
he ain't the brightest button on the shirt.
It's not like he's just hanging out all the time. It's hard to bump into Stone Cold. Yeah. But he says, that's happened. If you're listening, if you see me about, I owe
you
a drink.
That's really cool.
All right, so let's put that to Chris, particularly as there's a Hardcore Listening Live on August 10th at Hoxton Bar and Kitchen. So if you're a regular Hardcore Listening listener and you go along to that, you might be owed a drink by Chris.
Or Craig.
You can all fuck off. It's a terrible idea. He put that forward. I didn't go, hey guys.
Let's start to wrap up episode one.
I need a wee-wee really bad.
I'm letting these run long because...
we're not that drunk yet.
We've got a lot to talk about. But let's do a couple of questions. I'm going to go off Instagram first. I haven't looked at them. Lara Regini has asked of any festival highlights.
Great. We'll talk about that.
But we've just talked about festivals alone.
Glastonbury. There's some stuff I think we've been talking about.
Someone's already asking what the summer edition of Ascroobius is. Now, the summer edition of Ascroobius, everyone knows. Explanation for those
everyone
listening.
Everyone doesn't.
Shh. Explanation for those listening. We did a Facebook Live quick chat before we started recording. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned there's going to be a summer edition. Now, on the drunk cast, the Scroobius was invented. It's a gin and Pepsi Max.
It became
the most popular new drink of 2016.
the unofficial.
So that's the Scroobius. But tonight I'm going to have my first summer Scroobius. And it's a gin and sparkling elderflower. It's just a little bit of a difference. It's a little bit, anyway.
It's a massive... He's done a 180 there, mate, Shu. Just in case you haven't noticed. What he's done is taken something that's just full of artificial flavourings and is really bad and tried to level it off to what is more classically known as a reasonable thing to mix gin with. So he's rebranding this as this
anyway,
brilliant new
idea.
Anyway,
we've got a question here.
Hipster.
What's your number one late night post town movie to put on while you're attempting to eat your takeaway?
Great question.
It's a good question, isn't it? Mm. I used to really enjoy it. Me and Stu Turl had this for a long time. I used to be on TV all the time, but The Faculty.
Yes! That one, I would put that, I would 100%.
It's a great one, isn't it? It's not a good film in any way, really.
Oh, no, it's just a solid little. I think it was a good sort of reimagining of the sort of invasion of the body snatchers.
Yeah.
I think it's dope. I really like that movie. Yeah. But it is like, it's not meant to be.
Have you got
taxing.
A film that you just put on?
I can tell you. Can I answer?
Don't say straight to the A.
No, tune into
Hardcore Listing, Brett Goldstein edition to find out the story.
Yeah, shame. You'll put that on for a light-hearted little journey before bedtime, won't you?
I'm with you on that. I love Shame.
Thanks, man.
And weirdly, this is an odd one because she came up in your podcast and comes up in these lots. I went to see that with Natasha Fox.
Yeah.
And now we're not romantically engaged and she's got a lovely boyfriend or fiancé, in fact, and all this. But I was like, and we go and see films every now and then because there's some good films. And that was one that we went to, and within a minute, there's...
He's massive knob.
Glorious penis just flapping about on screen.
tremendous.
Yeah, but I think it's an amazing film. I think it's... I really enjoyed it because I think it's heavily influenced. I think Drive and Shame are both heavily influenced by a Buffalo 66.
Definitely.
Which is my favourite film. One of my favourites. And it's one of the ones I screened at the Prince Charles Cinema when I was doing my film night there. And what... The reason I think Shame is influenced by that is the beautiful scene where... What's the girl's name?
Oh, God.
She's wonderful.
Sings beautifully as well.
I haven't seen Shame.
It's amazing. But yeah... And that's the scene I'm speaking of. They allowed her to just get up and sing, and they just sit in silence and watch it. And it's one of the highlights of the film. It's beautiful. It's just allowing. And also, when he goes out for a run, and they just allow that to play out for ages. It's beautiful. But that reminded me of Buffalo 66 when his dad sings in the basement, and you just allow it, and it's this dream sequence. Equally, when Christina Ricci at the bowling alley just starts dancing, and they just let that play out beautifully. So, yeah.
That would be my film, though.
No.
It would have been Love, Honour and Obey.
Good choice. Good choice. Right, you talked about that on Hardcore Listen, and genuinely, I can't remember it. I own it on video, or I owned it on video. I can't remember anything about it. And you guys were talking about it again into detail. I need to rewatch it soon.
Yeah.
I Am Cole asks, how do you pronounce quinoa?
How do you pronounce?
Quinoa? What's quinoa?
It's quinoa, and I've just answered how you pronounce it, you fucking idiots. People pronounce it as quinoa.
You've probably looked here and it says quinoa.
No, I've had that. I've had that.
It's quinoa.
Oh, show off.
Thank you.
It's called quinoa. That's how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've not pre-checked.
I would also say another movie I'll go home and watch would be something like Conan. Conan or Predator.
Favourite film you've seen this year so far?
Trainspotting.
Chris. And we won't go into details of all the films, because we'll get into that. Trainspotting's a good shout. That's the first film I saw in the cinema this year.
Yeah.
I've got my list of films I've seen this year. Have you got a favourite, Chris?
Oh, I'm going to say I really liked...
Kickbox of Vengeance.
We watched that the other night.
Ghost
in the Shell.
I really enjoyed Ghost in the Shell. That's a good chat. I wouldn't have it as my favourite. I saw that just before I saw Guardians 2. I'd have that up there as my favourites. Also, Lady Macbeth, I really, really, really enjoyed. It's flawed, but I think it's really worth a watch. It's a unique film. Other than that, Logan and Get Out.
Oh, of course, Logan wins, but... Other ones would be Notes on Blindness, which we might talk about later.
We'll talk about that later. Because interestingly, Spider-Man, I auditioned for that. And I auditioned in the slot after Angelos, who got it.
All right.
Because weirdly, we bumped into each other in the street, and I had a little catch-up, because the year I did my Edinburgh show, I was on after him. So we knew each other from there. And it didn't occur to me that he was... Or I didn't question it. I just bumped into him at the train station. And then when it came out that this film was happening and I saw who was the lead, I was like, oh, shit, that's why I bumped into him, because we were literally both there auditioning. But, yeah, it's a weird one because it was the first audition. It was only my third or fourth audition, and it was the first one I didn't want to get because of lack of confidence. I felt I wasn't ready for that.
Really?
It was a lead role, and we'll go into it in more detail, but I've not seen it yet, but it's all lip-syncing. So it's all original tapes of this guy who was going blind, or had gone blind, is it?
It's throughout the whole journey.
It's the whole journey. And, I was just getting comfortable with auditioning and going in for roles. And again, I'm not someone that ever wants to get anything off the back of my name. I want to develop my ability and learn at a correct pace. I was up for that one. And I said to my agents, I was like, I'm not sure I want to go in for this. And they I rightfully said, look, it's all experience. Just go in and do it. And, yeah.
Anyway. You smash that, Angelos, while we're talking about it.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful movie. It's really worth a watch.
A La La Land and Moonlight, I thought, were both fantastic and deserve all the praise.
I really
and
want to watch them.
Battling over the Oscar and Lego Batman. But anyway, there's loads there. We'll go on to films. Well, we covered a lot of them ones, actually, on the last one, Raw. We talked about. I really enjoyed Raw. So yeah. So that's films of the year. I'm going to clear Instagram, and then on part two, where we'll look at the Facebook ones.
All right, yeah, sure.
And that works.
Yeah, genius.
So,
what time are we on now? How long have we been?
We're on an hour and 20, so it's not too bad. Bands that spend their whole set telling a crowd what to do, wake the fuck up, make a circle pit, jump, crouch down, then jump. Well, when we tell you, are they worried the performance won't be enough to get the crowd rowdy, so they have to tell them what to do? Discuss. I don't know. I think it's an interesting one. I don't mind a bit of. I'm a rap fan, so I don't mind a bit of put your hands in the air.
Yeah, totally. And I remember. Like yeah, and you
it's within
that.
Reason. I think I can get.
Was it in Reading when Slipknot?
Later?
Just
on this subject, things, but... years ago, this is going back to like the Reading, you know, going back to when we were like 20 and Slipknot were playing somewhere and they got most of the crowd just to sit down on the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was fucking fun, man. Yeah. I wasn't like, you're not the boss of me.
I've done a bit of it.
Cool. Like that sort of crowd control was kind of really, it was a, you know, when you said about everyone singing along, there's that degree of unity that comes with that. That is a really cool thing.
Frank Carter does a good thing of getting everyone to crouch for a certain bit and then all jump up at a particular point. And a few bands do that. I know when we were touring Distraction Pieces, after our first few gigs, circle pits started during Let 'Em Come. After that, I wanted them at every gig. And again, a lot of people... I went to punk gigs as a kid, so I know about circle pits. A lot of people were coming... to a spoken word rap guy, aren't going to know about that. So I'd instigate that a bit, and that was good fun. So, I'm kind of all right with that. Let me have a look. What superpower would you give each other, and why?
That's a really
good one. I know what I'd give Stu, and we've not talked about it, but this is the first drunk cast since you found out that you're disabled.
Yes, we both have.
So welcome to the gang of speech impediments.
We both have
speech impediment podcast.
Yeah, boy. So I would give Stu the ability to fucking talk properly.
Yeah,
back at you.
And I tell you what, if you both do that. So I'd give you the ability to be slightly deafer, so when I scream, when I'm just talking...
Chris is impossibly loud, and we'll get into him staying with me for 3 days recently, but there were regular times when I did just say, we don't need to shout, mate. Because we were literally talking from the kitchen, then it got to a subject he was excited about, and he started shouting at me from the kitchen. I just go, it's all right, mate, we don't need to shout, there's only two of us.
My mate Ben always used to be like that. He's like, there's no need for shouting at the moment, mate.
I got annoyed. This isn't related to either of these, but it reminded me because of one of the last ones. On your hardcore listing, there was a fan questions one, and you were talking about best track one, album one.
Mm. Yep.
I was annoyed at Bring the Noise by Public Enemy.
Fair play.
Just amazing. Too black, too strong, just amazing. Yep. And I'd planned this rant I'm going to have now. Since that episode, which was a good month or two ago.
Fucking hell.
And then...
This is what's annoying.
And then, this morning, I listened to your new podcast, and you have a section where you're really nice about my music and say complimentary things, so I can't. Yeah. But what I wanted to argue was where the fuck was Interdiction?
Yeah.
We don't count you, though.
No, but come on, that was written as an opening track. It says this is the intro to Distraction Piece. It's the ultimate.
Sometimes I make dinner. One. I make dinner for people, and they don't like it that much. I made dinner for them intentionally. You might have written it as an opening track. Doesn't mean to say I've got to rate it.
That is, honestly, I never expect to be brought up. And that's the one time I was listening. Oh, go on, just mention Interdiction. You know I'm never arrogant about my music. That was the one time I was thinking, Interdiction's a fucking good opener.
I never bang on about it, but I've spent the last month fucking thinking about it.
I was all excited, and then you said lovely things. And just to your point, when you messaged me about Interdiction being good, I replied politely and gratefully, because I remember you and Stu Tell both messaged me. It's a weird one when you make music, because in the first album or whatever, or demos, as you mentioned, I'm sending them to you, I'm sending to people. After that, I don't hit any of my friends up about any of my music or about any of my podcasts, because it's that thing of, that's not hating on anyone that does, but it's like it's saying, I know I'm going to be doing this forever. So me saying, can you listen to my music? And you saying, I'm like, but like forever? Like, can you give me feedback?
Yeah.
Have you got time forever to give me feedback on my music? It's a big ask of friends. It's why I don't do that. And that was my first proper solo record.
Yeah.
And I remember you and Stu Tell, who we've chatted and kept in touch and whatever, but Stu Tell hasn't particularly... I know he listens to it and he likes it and he's excited or whatever, but it's not like we message all the time going, oh, this song's great or that. And that was the one track. I remember getting a message off you and a message off Stu Tell going, fucking hell, that new single. So, yeah, it was lovely. I remember responding in a positive way rather than, fuck off, mate. Yeah, it's not like you're Nick.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway. I remember listening to it and I remember getting out of the car and then leaving you a voicemail and never replied to it. I think you did. But I can't remember what you said. Probably just said something you left my fridge open or something.
And that was a weird one because that track we kind of... It was a really quick turnover on things because the video, because I was going to cut my beard off.
Yeah.
We recorded it on August 1st and released it on August 3rd. So it was that quick a kind of, here's the video, here's it done, it's out. And it's the first time I've ever done any music without sending it out first. And the traditional way, as you'll know, as a club promoter, of people sending out tracks 2-3 months advance out and all that.
Yeah, cool.
It's the first time I didn't do any of that. Just literally, it was like, you're going to hear it on August 3rd.
No marketing campaigns.
And then it just blew up.
Do you know what, right? You know, my major criticism of that is you kept saying to me, oh, I'm going to cut my beard off in the video. I
didn't cut it off enough, right?
You fucking...
I had one take, mate, and no mirror. I did my best, but
dickhead. Shaved a bit of his beard off, put it in a bag and sold it. You shaved your fucking pubes off, put them in a bag and gave them to me for Christmas.
Inspiration, my friends.
I was sending him questions on eBay from an unknown account asking about his pubes. I was going, have you got any pubes in there? And you were just typically handling the weird questions I was sending you very well.
I'm a polite gentleman. I'm going to wrap this episode up by announcing something that I've not announced yet. And, oh no, is it a spoiler if I announce it?
Have you got testicular cancer?
It was Pride on Saturday.
Actually, I'm not going to announce it. I've said it now, haven't I?
Go on.
You know, or it just came to mind because I released Introduction on August 3rd, and that was the start of me releasing things on my birthday. Mm-hmm. And often I'll do, like the last 2 years, I've done a live podcast on my birthday. Couldn't do that this year because you pricks booked your live podcast a week after my birthday, so...
Selfish.
Cheers for that, guys. But I've decided my birthday gift to everyone this year is on August 3rd.
Why are you unbuttoning your shirt?
it's a full frontal.
Actually, it is.
Shut up. My birthday gift to everyone this year is I'm going to make a free page on the Speech Development website, and I'm going to make a No Commercial Breaks free. The War and Peace album.
Wow.
SDR007 free. The Giacomo Brown album free. The Polar Bear album free. Because it is a weird time where it's hard to charge for music these days. And whilst I think it's important as a label to protect your artists and try and make money from, equally, the important thing is people hearing it, right?
Yeah.
So we're doing this. I've spoken to those artists. Obviously, Giacomo Brown's up for it because the first time he ever got a check of any profit, he extracted that money and burnt it in a bucket in the garden because he doesn't believe in earning money from music.
Love your brother.
So again, I said to him, I was like, "Is it all right if I give your album away for free?" He was like, "Whatever."
He was busy making alien water, wasn't he? I bet.
Oh, mate, I ain't seen him. So I take it he's going to be at Lizards.
Yeah, he'll be at Lizards.
Oh, good, good.
He'll be at Lizards. Anyway, that's the end of this episode. We'll be back with part two, where we'll get a little bit more drunk. And again, I'll mention that Lizards, as you mentioned it, July 22nd, come down, party with the boys.
All of us.
Party with the boys.
Peace.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Discretion Pieces.
treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.